driving you home and crazy every afternoon. This is the 3HL, powered by the Tennessee Lottery, with Brett Daugherty, Mickey Ryan, and Don Davenport.
HL, powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Happy hour time. Brett Daugherty with you until 6 o'clock. Happy Wednesday. Will Bowling in the house. Guest hosting today as Don Davenport is on maternity leave. Mickey and JT both on furlough. David Reed producing. Will, thanks for being here, man. I know it's the handsome check that drove you to this this gig today, but for those that don't know, Will is the digital producer on 104.5 The Zone. And for those that don't know what that might mean, what do you do?
So Mark Howard affectionately calls me Podcast Man, which I feel like is a much more simple
explanation. It sounds like a superhero.
Yeah, no, like I kind of like it. I'm going to get business cards printed with that on it soon. Just says Podcast Man, has my phone number on it. But anything podcast, that goes through me. And I host, I think I'm up to 5 original shows or 6 original shows, depending on the week, depending on the time of year, talking Preds, baseball, Vols, talking with rookies in an interview series, and then helping produce on Paul and Chad's podcasts, and getting to tag along for some cool stuff there as well. But it's a lot of fun. I've grown up here. I've lived here my whole life after going to UT and briefly being a student athlete there, and living the dream, being back at a station I've listened to since I was very, very little. So it's a lot of fun. I enjoy it.
Student athlete meaning what?
Meaning I was briefly a distance runner on the track and cross country teams at UT.
I always wonder about like distance runners. Like there's one specific lady in my neighborhood that I see running all over Franklin, like not just in our neighborhood, but all over Franklin. Sure. And her name is Mandy. And I always want to ask Mandy, what are you running from? Like psychologically speaking, what were you running from, Will?
I really can't explain it. Like Jonathan Schaefer, producer of the Wake Up Zone, says that it running is a mental illness. And the older I get and the further detached I get from running as many miles as I was a week, I started to agree with that. I've started to try to get back into it, and I'm so embarrassed on how slow and out of shape that I am that I usually go for about a week. I do this every year. I will run for a week, and then I will just say, you know what? It's really not worth it anymore. I was burned out. We're not going to do this anymore, and I'll hang up the newly broken in running shoes I've just bought and won't put them on again for, I don't know, 6 or 8 months.
All right. For those listening that are like me and that can drop weight pretty quickly by running, I've done it multiple times, but I hate running so bad. And I'll tell you why, and maybe you can help me here. I know I should do it. And I know that I can, as I said, I can drop weight quickly if I do it, but I get so bored.
Yep.
I get so bored, and then I'm one, like, then I'm looking like, how much farther do I have? And I'm just trying to do a 5K. Like, when can I be done? And so what's the answer to I'm so bored when I run?
Even when I was running fast and still kind of enjoyed it, I mean, I listen to music 24/7. If I wasn't running with people, I mean, at practice, we're running with people and you can have a full conversation while you run, and that's not bad at all, but can't do treadmills. I refuse to get on a treadmill or an elliptical because I will get bored within a minute of doing that. It is the worst thing that I could – if you want to torture me, just put me on a treadmill and say, stay there for 30 minutes. Like, and that's it. Just 30 minutes.
And then you're just watching the clock, right? Like, I got 22 more minutes. They're
like, all right, well, we're almost minute 3 now. Like, it, I hate that. I always hated that. But the older I get and the more detached I get from actually being – pretty fit at one point. I mean, like, my 12-year-old self could outrace me in a mile and lap me. Like, it's so embarrassing thinking about how good I was and how awful I am now comparatively. So it's just not even worth it anymore. Well, like, I'm done.
You mentioned the Preds. The Preds returned to Bridgestone Arena July 1st for Phase 2 workouts. As of Monday, the NHL has confirmed 23 of 396 players tested positive for the coronavirus. Training camp is set to begin on Monday. And the next step would be to travel to the hub city, I guess Edmonton, for the Preds on July 26th. So that's less than 3 weeks away. And then you just jump right in. Playoffs August 1st. And that's going to be interesting to see how these teams handle that kind of stress level, both physically and mentally. But I would make the argument, not just being a homer and a guy that grew up in Nashville like you did, but I would make the argument that the Preds might be set up to have success given this formula because of the veteran group that they have and because of the fact that they didn't feel like they were playing up to their level individually and as a team. And now I've had time to think about that, right? Yeah. Almost like a restart.
It's a total reset button for that team. I think it couldn't have come in a better season for them when they really were just – they never quite clicked, especially offensively, for a lot of this season. And really, either side. I mean, it just wasn't – you saw potential there in a couple games, and they get two really big wins over St. Louis, one at home and one on the road. You're thinking, this team could beat anybody on their day. And then when they're not on their day, they could lose to anybody in the league, which is honestly more infuriating than just having an average team that beats the teams it's supposed to and loses to the team it's also supposed to lose to. So it's definitely a good reset for them. It's just to see what happens in net. If UC Saros keeps the starting job, I know that David Poile has gone on the record on this station and in any of his media availabilities that UC Saros will probably have to earn the starting spot back from mm-hmm. Pecorine again. So that's a big question mark is who starts, but I think will be really thankful to have a reset and a restart to their season and their playoffs.
Right. Cause the Skaters can play as well as they want to play, but if they don't get goaltending, forget right. about it. You're done. 615-737-1045 live team sports resuming tonight. MLS back. MLS is back. Tournament begins. Nashville SC might not be involved. They haven't been kicked out of the tournament yet. They've got 9 positive tests. Dallas had 14, but Dallas had 13 players. And we haven't heard anything officially with regard to who has tested positive. David Reed made a good point earlier saying, what if it's a travel party? And that may be why they haven't been asked to leave yet. But there have been no other positive tests, just Dallas and Nashville.
Yeah.
So that starts tonight.
Still no confirmation on the cases yesterday that were, quote-unquote, unconfirmed. And there were 4 cases that we didn't know about yet. I think there's actually some surprise out there that there hasn't been some kind of statement today in either direction about Nashville SC because Grant Wall reported yesterday or 2 days ago rather there were similar feelings about Nashville that there were at Dallas in the early stages when they were starting to get a lot of positive tests back. So I'm surprised we haven't heard anything, and maybe that's good news for Nashville SC.
Orlando City SC and Inter Miami CF tonight, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Ivy League has canceled all fall sports. So they're being kind of ambiguous about whether or not they will try to play football in the spring. They're not saying that had been the rumor. Power Five people are saying that's not going to affect them. That they kind of knew that was coming. It's no worry to them necessarily in terms of what they're going to decide to do. Dan Wetzel with a good tweet. The Ivy League announcement is significant. However, those schools don't need the money. They actually lose money. Big football schools do need the money. Motivations are different. I think that's a great point to be made. And well done by Wetzel there. So we'll see what happens. The other story locally today was to be the day that the Tennessee, the TSSAA Board of Control was going to vote which option they were going to do in terms of football. As Bernard Childress pointed out last week with us, the executive director of the TSSAA, when I mentioned, can you kind of roll through the 3 options? He goes, actually, there are 4. The reason why I said 3 is because the 4th one includes no playoffs, and there's no way there's going to be any support on any level whatsoever for that. So there are 3 options, Will, and you've been around the high school scene a long time. I have too. So option 1 is 7 regular season games with 32 playoff teams. Then you've got 8 and 16, 16 meaning region champion and region runner-up. That's it. Then you've got 9 games and 8 playoff teams. So they're trying to decide that. But the TSSAA announced today that it would not be voting on contingency plans for high school football and girls soccer as scheduled. Instead, based on conversations with the governor's office, they will delay the Board of Control vote. And really, there's no reason to vote on it because, you know, with the state of emergency through August 29th in Davidson County in Tennessee, there's no contact anyway until August 30th, so you've got time.
Yeah, I agree. I honestly think that coaches just need clarity on how to plan their off seasons and how to plan practices. And there are a lot of coaches today that were expecting some kind of clarity, some kind of answer on what's going to be next for their football programs that are still just going to have to wait. And that's not the worst thing in the world. But going back to the options, I like the 16-team playoff bracket a lot. You know, I've called high school football games for Alcoa in East Tennessee and for Brentwood Academy here, and I have called a lot of mercy rule first-round playoff games that would be completely eliminated. And you're seeing good, meaningful football that could be played in the first week of the postseason with an 8-game regular season. I mean, that doesn't sound bad to me at all. I think that's certainly the best option, and it sounds like...
Take a break, and when we come back, just a couple of minutes away, Todd Furman is going to move fast, and we'll talk futures in all sports. We'll talk golf. We'll talk NASCAR. We'll talk NFL. We'll talk Major League Baseball. We'll talk NBA restart. We'll talk NHL. All of that coming up next with Todd Furman. He will talk about sports from a sports wagering perspective. That's coming up next, 3HL 104.5. 3HL powered by the Tennessee Lottery on 104.5 The Zone. Britt Doherty, Will Bowling filling in today. Todd Furman is in Vegas, and we started the conversation off well in the break. I said, Todd, where are you, in the garage? And you're like, no, this is my living room.
You know, those kind of comments hurt, Brent. I know normally Mickey and Dawn are the guiding light. They're the voice of reason here. So the fact that you're sitting in the pilot chair without your normal two co-hosts means it could be open season. So I'm going to be prepared to defend myself from start to finish until you guys let me off the air.
Hey, are all the strip clubs and casinos open? What's going on in Vegas?
You know what? I can't comment honestly on the strip clubs. It's a great question, but I don't think they are. The casinos are, or at least most of them are open. Obviously, some different constraints, so to speak, as far as the customer experience is concerned. Yeah. And that it's really been a moving target over the last couple weeks. Things were, you know, pretty open about a month ago when the casinos reopened, and restrictions have kind of tightened up, obviously, as our state, along with a lot of others, have seen a spike in the virus.
Todd Furman from Lock It In on FS1 with us on 3HL. So MLS is back. Tournament starts today without Nashville. Dallas got sent home from camp. Nashville's probably close, unfortunately. Is there a lot of action out there for the first team sport to go out there and participate?
You know, I'm wondering what's going on with Nashville, because the reality of it is, I mean, we saw Dallas. They couldn't follow the rules. Apparently, you guys can't follow the rules either to make sure that the team's out there. It's an event that I think kind of serves as a nice precursor to the return of the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball, of course. I can't see a scenario where it really moves the needle as far as sports betting is concerned, because when you look at the MLS, it really pales in comparison to the bigger European domestic leagues. English Premier League is the top dog, then it's followed by La Liga, Serie A, and the Bundesliga, because it really had a monopoly, saw its betting handle increase 400 to 500%. Which I guess, obviously, if you're talking about raw numbers, going from $50 a game up into $200 a game isn't exactly, you know, earth-shattering numbers. But at the same time, soccer, especially at the European level, has really grown. We'll see if the MLS can capitalize on any of that momentum.
Yeah, Todd, of course, the big headline in the NFL, the deal for Patrick Mahomes, a 10-year deal, though. So we're talking 12 years now total with what he has. What are the odds that he sees the end of that deal? Is that something that I can get some action on right now?
You know what? I think you have to make him a heavy favorite. Obviously, you hope that his health holds up and that he can continue to do the magical things we've seen only through the first couple of years and all the records he's on pace to set, if he can continue at this torrid pace. But the $100 million question, or I guess in this case closer to a $500 million question, is will this ultimately look to be a franchise-friendly deal for Kansas City when we're talking about increased salary cap? You know, TV distribution, digital rights, gambling sponsors getting into the space. I think the Chiefs really helped themselves out because they know what they have to allocate for their starting quarterback. They know what this deal is going to look like, not only 2 or 3 years down the road, but 7 to 10 years. And while it may handcuff them a little bit in the short term in terms of putting talent around him, I think when we're talking about year 7 to 10, when quarterbacks typically hit their stride in their late 20s, early 30s, they're going to be sitting pretty, poised to do a lot of the things that maybe we've seen the Patriots do since way back in 2001.
So, Todd, from a very, very big quarterback contract to a very small one, the Patriots officially announced the signing of Cam Newton just about an hour ago. How does his signing and his presence kind of change the win totals and change the expectations for that Patriots team this year?
You know, it's more public perception, Will, than anything else as far as what Cam's going to be able to do. We saw their win total go from 9 to 9.5. We saw them as slight favorites in the division ahead of Buffalo, move about 15 to 20 cents. I think the move at Foxbet was from right around plus 120 to even money. But I think if we're expecting Cam to hit the ground running right from game one, if he is ultimately named the starter, so much of it is going to be contingent on his health. I mean, is that shoulder 100%? Will the foot allow him to be as mobile in the pocket as we've seen when he was putting up MVP-like numbers? He's learning a new system. It's not going to be nearly as forgiving as what he was doing in Carolina. But I think it gives the Patriots a little bit of stability at the position that they probably weren't going to have with his Auburn counterpart, Jarrett Stidham, who was going to be taking his first trip around the sun as an NFL starting quarterback.
I want to go back to Patrick Mahomes. Why in the world would he sign, just from his perspective, a contract that long? Were you surprised by that?
Definitely, but I think when you look at Mahomes and the family he comes from, maybe it's a little bit of a different dynamic. I mean, having a dad and essentially your uncle that have been in and around professional sports for as long as they have, you go, all right, we don't know exactly what the durability is going to be. If you can guarantee X number of dollars, that's life-changing money. And I think if you're comfortable in the organization, you like the relationship you've built with the general manager, Andy Reid, and you have faith that they're going to continue to do right by you, you secure that kind of money. But there's no doubt in my mind, Brent, when you're talking about trying to squeeze as much money as you possibly could, if he signed a 3 to 5 year deal and then was to sign a subsequent deal, assuming the financials of the NFL continue to skyrocket like they have, he left a king's ransom on the table. But I don't think it's a scenario that I'll ever get to figure out how much different my life would be if I had $500 million in the bank or if I had closer to $750 million.
Well, and Deshaun Watson is up next, right? Like, he's entering year four. They did the fifth-year option. We've talked about, and I think we might have talked about it last week, the power that certain players have over numbers. And like, I get the Hall of Fame quarterback type Aaron Rodgers guy that's late in his career that has an effect on numbers. But what about a guy like Deshaun Watson? Because you keep asking about, like, how does Bill O'Brien have his job? He has his job because Deshaun Watson goes out there and figures out a way to win despite the ridiculous moves that front office makes. How much of an impact does he have on numbers?
You know, when you look at the Houston Texans and some of the areas where they're a little bit deficient, Deshaun Watson, and I've said before and actually took a little bit of heat for it, I call them a poor man's Russell Wilson, because he goes out there and he can erase a lot of the deficiencies on your roster, not only on the offensive side, but also on the defensive side. And Deshaun Watson, in my opinion, is still only scratching the surface for what he'll be able to ultimately accomplish as a starting quarterback in the National Football League. So when you look at the Houston Texans offense, if you take him out of the fold, and to be honest, I don't even know who their backup is going into the season, but I don't think you're talking about a guy who can fill in with a semblance of that skill set. And it's why Watson is approaching that full touchdown adjustment in terms of a point spread impact. Wow. You mentioned Aaron Rodgers. That number will come down a little bit depending on what we may or may not see with Jordan Love if there are preseason games. But so much of a quarterback's overall value to its team's power number isn't just his skill set. It's also what that drop-off looks like to a backup. And it's part of the reason that Matt Ryan, despite putting up numbers for a team that typically finishes around 500, still remains one of the more valuable quarterbacks, because Atlanta hasn't exactly done themselves a service by finding a suitable backup should Matt Ryan miss an extended period of time.
Houston backup quarterback A.J. McCarron. Then Alex,
I was going to say, I thought it was still McCarron. I wasn't quite sure if he was on the roster, how long a deal he'd signed. But when you're going to a guy potentially in the third stringer, and Alex McGowell from FIU, let's just say he doesn't bring that same versatility and athleticism to the table or decision making that Deshaun Watson does.
That's why we got a Nick Tiano mentioned in there as well, former Chattanooga high school quarterback from or Chattanooga Baylor quarterback, went to UTC. Todd, how much are the Cowboys regretting right now not going ahead and signing Dak Prescott to a deal after seeing this money for Mahomes?
You know, honestly, I think if you're the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott goes into Jerry Jones's office or wants to talk to Stephen Jones and goes, well, look at the contract that the Kansas City Chiefs gave Patrick Mahomes, you laugh and you send him to go back outside into the hallway to think about his comments and then come back in with a stronger defense of what he has not accomplished so far to this point in his NFL career. Dak has been an excellent placeholder. I think he's got potential to take the next step with Coach McCarthy there. A lot of the buzz in Green Bay is that McCarthy wasn't ever able to truly unveil the playbook he wanted to because Aaron Rodgers pushed back. So if Dak becomes open to some of what McCarthy wants to try and run this season. You're talking about a bevy of skill position talent with Ezekiel Elliott, Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, the list goes on. But I think if we're going to make comparisons, it's really apples to oranges. Not fair to Patrick Mahomes to put Dak Prescott in that same caliber or tier.
Todd Furman with us on 3HL, at Todd Furman on Twitter. Get him there. Bob Baffert admits horses on drugs. I'm here for horses on drugs. I want horses to be on drugs because I want to see them run as fast as they possibly can. We've got a lot of time, honestly, between now and the Derby. What kind of impact does that have? Did that surprise you, that story?
You know, I don't think it surprised me at all. It'd be the same thing as if we found out tomorrow that the most valuable person in any SEC athletic program was the bagman, and you actually got Nick Saban to come out openly and say that. So Bob Baffert just basically tells us what we already know. You just don't expect to hear it from that particular source. We were really deprived of some of the best three-year-olds when we saw the Belmont. You would have loved to see Nadal and Charlatan out there running. I have no idea exactly what we're going to see as far as a Kentucky Derby field. Yes, it's going to be interesting given its placement on the calendar, but when you're not talking about it as the first leg, let's see if it maintains some of that prestige or if some of the power brokers and bigger horses will elect to go in other directions, whether it's running at some of these local summer meets or maybe focusing on the Breeders' Cup instead. I don't know what the Kentucky Derby field will ultimately look like. I just don't think when you're talking about its new placement on the sports calendar, it carries nearly the same cachet as it would if it was that first weekend in May.
Horses on Drugs, another great band name that has come out of this show today. That sounds like another.
I'm here for that. Take, I want those horses. Band. I want those horses to take as many drugs as possible.
You know, it would definitely change the sport. We know Lasix have been around for a while. The unfortunate part is that we've seen way too many horses euthanized at Santa Anita over the last, you know, year to 18 months. I'm not quite sure if we're talking about super horses that might drop dead or explode as soon as they cross the finish line. That would be great for the horse racing industry as a whole, let alone some of those animal rights activists that are out there.
Well, switching gears from one steroid-impacted sport to another, let's switch to Major League Baseball and their 60-game season. How do you even begin to set odds for teams to win a World Series when the season and the games themselves mean so much more and the season's going to look so different?
You know, honestly, I think people are overblowing the fact that we're talking about a 60-game schedule versus 162. You still have to believe that the best teams are ultimately going to emerge. Maybe get one or two surprises or a team that starts a little bit slow that has to scratch and claw its way to relevance, whether it's for a wild card or a division title. But I don't believe playing 60 games is somehow going to give the Marlins, Detroit Tigers, Kansas City Royals, etc., an inside track towards ultimately winning a World Series. Sure, you're going to be aided by the fact that if you have depth and you lose a starting pitcher that goes on the IL for 10 days, that's, you know, a lot bigger portion of the schedule than it is over the 162-game grind. I do think you're going to see teams with deeper bullpens have a little bit of an advantage, especially early on where starters aren't stretched out, probably won't go six or seven innings. But it begs the question for players that you've looked at in the past that started slow in April and May, did they start slow because they didn't have reps or was it because of the weather? Maybe they pick up in July and all of a sudden we're talking about baseball, juice balls, and everything else, you know, flying off the bats. I think it's going to be interesting because if you do go through that 3-7 stretch, it's going to put a lot more pressure on you than it would if you were playing the 162-game stretch. And I still think we're talking about the Yankees and Dodgers as teams to beat. But maybe a side like the Tampa Bay Rays becomes a lot more intriguing in the futures market at 20-1 than they would have been during the course of a normal summer.
Have you seen any advantages towards American League teams that are built right now to have the DH versus National League teams that haven't had to plan for this and are just putting their best guy on the bench in the lineup?
You know, it's a great question because constructing your rosters are going to look significantly different with this being the case. Maybe we're going to find players that are going to emerge as better hitters when they don't have to focus on their defense. I think of a guy like Kyle Schwarber who did he didn't do anyone favors when he had to be out there in the outfield looking probably like Brent in his men's league softball, hoping that the ball finds his glove after he's had 6 to 8 adult beverages. But I do think a team like the Dodgers that have so many bats at their disposal, the rich kind of get richer. And I'm curious, I think, like a lot of baseball fans, to see what the DH does. I know everyone out there who calls themselves a baseball purist, well, I'm really going to miss, you know, the subtle nuances, the double switch. All right, like, give me a break. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. That's not going to make or break who wins a pennant.
I may be young, but I am an old man on that. You just spoke to my opinion right there. So I appreciate that.
I used to think that too, but now I'm like, hey, just
give me homers. Give me at bats. I don't want to see a pitcher bat. That's like me standing up there.
Brett, you want horses on drugs. There's no doubt you want baseball players on drugs as well. If it was up to you, you'd have a bucket of the greenies and syringes right when you walked into the clubhouse every single day to make sure that these guys all look like Barry Bonds when they were out there.
Those horses are already massive. Can you imagine how big those things would be with those little jockeys on top of them?
I don't think horses need to add 75 to 100 pounds of muscle to their frame already. I'm not sure their bodies would be able to hold up that same way.
Hey, what if you both are baseball guys? What if somebody hits 400? This is Mickey's question. What if somebody hits 400? You want to talk about an asterisk?
And you know what? There's a prop out there, actually. 7.5 to 1, the going rate, if you believe someone's going to hit 400. I think the official at-bats, I want to say, are 186 for a 60-game schedule. I don't think it carries the same weight as it would if you're doing it during the 162-game schedule with 504 minimum at-bats. But I do think it could create a great storyline if we're going into the last 10 games of the season and you have a player flirting with that. I think it'd be even better if it wasn't a household name, if it was a journeyman, someone that had been called up, you know, deep on the roster, that all of a sudden found themselves in that National League DH role. You want to talk about baseball purists' heads exploding? If you had a DH in the National League hit 400, then you may as well just shut it all down, because I think baseball fans wouldn't come back in 2022.
Todd, Kevin Harvick won last weekend at Brickyard again. Who do you like this week?
Oh, what a kick in my manhood there. I was sitting on a ticket with Denny Hamlin at 5.5 to 1, six laps to go. The only thing that works against you is the gambling gods deciding that they want to try and torment you with a blown tire. Thankfully, Denny emerged from that crash okay, but it definitely hurt the bankroll a little bit. This is one of two tracks that Kevin Harvick hasn't won at. This, along with the Charlotte Roval. Denny Hamlin hasn't exactly performed well here. I keep waiting for Kyle Busch to break through, and if there's a track he's going to do it at, Kentucky has been one of his absolute best. He owns two wins here. I'd be looking at him in that 6.5 to 1 range. If you want to go a little bit further down the board, I think his teammate and Eric Jones, it's really been feast or famine at 25 to 1. And if we're keeping it with Kyle Busch, we may as go with one of the Busch brothers, as those two had one of the best finishes the last NASCAR season, with Kurt edging out Kyle. Maybe roles are reversed this weekend come Sunday at Kentucky.
All right, the golf guys are at Muirfield Village. Who do you like this week?
You know, interesting at the top of the leaderboard. I mean, all of the so-called favorites have drawn attention, whether it's Hideki Matsuyama, Justin Thomas, John Rahm, or Patrick Cantlay. I think when you go further down the list, we know this is the second shot course, as Jack Nicklaus would like. If Jack Nicklaus designed the course, things might be a little bit different. So when you look to try and identify some of the guys that are out there, I think long shots like Mark Leishman or Gary Woodland add some value. But ultimately, I think Justin Thomas, taking a week off, knowing how poorly he performed the last time we saw him, probably becomes the guy to beat. And we see one of the household names ultimately emerge, thankfully at more favorable prices than Bryson DeChambeau offered at about 6 to 1 last weekend before he came back on Sunday to knock off Matthew Wolf.
Ivy League getting rid of fall sports. What are the odds that college football starts on time?
You know, honestly, I've seen some people that I respect out there saying that, you know, the Ivy League isn't going to be a harbinger of things to come as far as, you know, the FBS is concerned, knowing how much money is at stake. But at the same time, I find it hard to believe that the FBS wants to jumpstart a schedule, knowing that there could be so many landmines out there. Does it behoove them to play four games and have to shut things down? I think over the next couple weeks, we're going to see decisions made. I'd like to see all these leagues kind of play self-contained schedules, knowing that every school could at least adhere to protocol. I don't think there's a scenario that anybody wants to see when you're talking about an Alabama taking on a team from the FCS, and these two teams can't test the same way. You're creating an unfair disadvantage out there and putting some of the players at risk. So I actually make it an underdog that we get a full regular season as far as some of the Power Five conferences are concerned. I don't think spring football is the absolute worst. Obviously, it would be a much different dynamic because we'd be talking about a sport where Clemson, Ohio State, and some of the big boys probably didn't have their most NFL-ready players on the roster, with them focusing on taking the step to the next level.
You're such a wet blanket today, Todd.
Hey, you know what? I want to be honest and forthright here. I could say, you know what, Brent? I make it a 1 to 10 favorite that we're going to get college football kicking off Labor Day weekend. I only make them a slight underdog to start. I just think that we've had too many negative factors that are out there. That are going to throw wrenches in there. And ultimately, when you look at the collegiate landscape, it's not as simple as getting these kids to sign a waiver that they're okay to play. If you're going to make professional athletes go out there, hey, I have no problem with that. It's a little bit different for college players. I'm not a parent myself, But I think, Brent, you've been in the spot. You've been around high school football. It's a much different dynamic when you go, yeah, just put them out there and hope for the best. Yeah. The schools can't create a safe environment. As much as we all love college football, I'm just not as optimistic now as I would have been a month ago that we're going to get a season in its entirety.
Yep, well said. All right, on the way out, odds that a guy driving a stolen car in Oregon crashes into a woman driving another stolen car.
I would have made it a pretty heavy long shot in that particular prop bet. You know, somewhere in that ballpark of 75-1 or 100-1. But knowing how the Oregon State Lottery has really set odds, it would probably come out at minus $1.20 because you only have one way betting, and they do everything they can to try and gouge some of their players.
The upset there is that happened in Oregon and not Florida. That is the upset of that news story, that's for sure.
Oh, man. Can you imagine the police on the scene investigating that? Wait a minute. You stole that car, too? Todd, appreciate it, man. Great work, as always.
Always a pleasure, guys. Stay safe and enjoy the great sports coming up this weekend.
All right, lock it in on FS1, Bet the Board podcast, at Todd Furman on Twitter. Yeah, that did happen. We'll tell you the details. Oregon man drives stolen car, crashes into woman driving another stolen car. That's next, 3HL 104.5 The Zone. So out of all the stories today, I found one headline that really grabbed my attention. So, of course, I clicked on it from the New York Post. Brent Daugherty, Will Bowling with you, 3HL 104.5 The Zone. Coming up tomorrow, Mike Keith, voice of the Titans, will be the guest host. And looking forward to that one. We'll get Mike telling a bunch of stories, UT, Vols, Titans, all kinds of things with Mike tomorrow. This story stuck out, Will. Oregon man driving stolen car crashes into woman driving another stolen car. What are the odds? Here is the story from the New York Post. A police chase in Oregon ended when a driver fleeing authorities in a stolen car crashed into a woman driving another stolen car. The debacle took place Monday when police responded to a report of a stolen Toyota Land Cruiser driving through downtown Newburgh, according to the Newburgh-Dundee police. A pursuit ensued and lasted for several blocks until the driver crashed into another car near an intersection. So, that pursuit didn't last long, apparently, because, like, if you're evading the police, you're probably going at a high rate of speed. And if you just go several blocks, then you're an awful driver. Cops identified the driver of the first car as Randy Lee Cooper of Portland. After taking Cooper into custody, the police realized that the second car was also reported stolen in an unrelated crime 3 weeks ago. The driver of that car, Kristen Nicole Begu, also found to be under the influence. It's a bad day for her. I mean, she's just minding her own business, just drunk, driving a stolen car, and she just gets rammed by some other dude running from the cops. I mean, she thought she was good. Cooper was charged with unauthorized use of a motor vehicle, attempting to elude police, assault, and reckless driving. Oregon. I mean, you just got nothing to do. I mean, what's going on?
The question is, can Oregon count this as their first national championship? That is my first question. My second question is, if you're going to steal a car, why are we going with a Toyota Land Cruiser? Like, can we raise our expectations a little bit? Car thieves, the car thieves of Nashville, just turn up your radios a little bit right now. If you're going to steal a car, don't steal a Toyota Land Cruiser. Steal something that's worth something. I kid, of course, but...
Cruiser's a nice car.
But come on. Like,
but you're saying if you're going to steal a car, steal a Bentley? I mean, is that where you're going?
I mean, if there's a Bentley available, that would definitely be a better option. But
I mean, Reed, if you were going to steal a car, what car would you steal?
It would probably be a Honda Accord because there's millions of them on the roadways in Nashville right now. A Toyota Land Cruiser is pretty easy to pick out when it's going down the road, casting shadows on the rest of the cars.
Reed is playing chess and the rest of us are playing checkers. That's an incredible answer.
But if Reed's capable of stealing a vehicle, he's probably not as smart as he is to pick a Accord because there are millions of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you blame
him. I mean, this is just another fatality in 2020. Another bad thing that's happened in 2020 that Florida man has lost out to Oregon man. I mean, that is the upset of 2020. In a weird year, Oregon man trumps Florida man. Crazy. Unbelievable.
Well, when I sent you that story, I mean, that's what you said. Like, yeah. You were like, I'm not really surprised by the story. I mean, guy steals a car, evades police in a police chase, crashes into a woman who's also driving a stolen car, and she was drunk too. There's that.
Yeah. I mean, that's like hitting for the cycle of weird crimes to all happen at the same time.
You're like, I'm not surprised by all that. I'm just surprised that it didn't occur in Florida.
Yeah, of all places. That's like the best thing to do on your birthday is you Google Florida man and your birthday, and you just read the first weird story that you haven't seen before in past years. It's a really fun game to play sometime, but I guess I'm just going to have to replace it with Oregon man for the time being.
Well, Will, I appreciate you hanging out today. @Will_bowling, you say you always pick up like 2 or 3 followers when you host shows on the zone. So.
If they spell it right, because usually people spell my last name like the sport with a W in it, but it is like Thompson Bowling Arena, not like the sport that I'm very bad at, which I also get asked a lot. But
if your name is on a basketball arena at a university, does that mean that you get to shoot basketball there anytime you want?
Ish. I mean, my dad always told me if I ever get lost on campus, just find my name and start driving towards it. So that was always my motto for most of my years at UT. Thank you for having me, though. This has been really fun, and I appreciate you guys letting me hang out for the afternoon.
If you get lost on campus.
Yep.
All right. Mike Heat coming up tomorrow. Have a good night.